of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Good afternoon, you may be seated. My name is Gisella Triana, I'm the Senior Judge of the Third Court. I'd like to welcome you along with Justice Lopez Theofanis and Justice Crump to the Third Court this afternoon. At this time, I am going to call cause number 0323209CV. Nope, that's once again. Let's go down to 130, that is not the case that I'm calling. 0324162CV, Great American Insurance Company of New York versus Williamson County. If I can go ahead and have y'all make your announcements and let me know who you're representing.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Mike Pipkin and Taylor Felt on behalf of the appellant, Great American Insurance Company.
Y'all ready to proceed?
We are ready to proceed.
Thank you.
And Judge Allen, Williamson County, right? As well, right?
Thank you. A few housekeeping issues. First of all, we are being live broadcasted on YouTube on our channel. It will also be taped and it will be on our webcast if y'all want to go back to it and watch yourselves talk. Also, our time, I will ask you to please make note of the timekeeping device right in front of me. If it is green, the light is on green, that means you're good with time. If the yellow light comes on, that means you have a couple of minutes to wrap up. If the red light comes on, it means you're out of time. And if you know, please finish your thought, please finish your sentence, specifically if you're answering Justice's question, please finish that, but otherwise, wrap up. My understanding is that we're dividing time in 15 minutes. We're going to start off with the appellant. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then we'll be taking, the appellee will take the 20 minutes, and then we'll have a five-minute rebuttal. Okay. Then I guess we're ready to proceed. Mr. Pipkin, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. The matter before you today is one of first impression, but it is not one of great complexity. The facts are simple. On June 2nd, 2021, Williamson County sent two letters. The first was sent to its contractor, Ritter Bodkin Prime Construction Company, on advising them that they had been terminated from a construction project in Williamson County, the River Ranch County Park Phase 1 development, and that demand would be made on Ritter Bodkin's bonding company, Great American. A second letter was sent on June 2nd, 2021. This one was directed to Great American, advising that Williamson County had declared Ritter Bodkin in default and terminated the contract, that's in quotes, demanding that Great American honor its performance obligations under the performance bond that it had issued. Then, more than 1 year later, on August 17, 2022, Williamson County filed suit against Ritter Bodkin and Great American in Williamson County District Court. As for Great American, Williamson County asserted one cause of action, breach of the performance bond, a performance bond that was provided and delivered in accordance with Chapter 2253 of the Government Code. Again, the facts are simple. And the issue presented for review by this court is also very, very simple. Did Williamson County trigger the statute of limitations provided in Section 2253.078A when on June 2nd, 2021, it terminated Ritter Bodkin from the construction project and on the same day advised Great American that Williamson County had declared the contractor in default and terminated the contract? Again, a quote from the letter that is part of the record. It's actually pages 112 and 114 of the appendix.
Mr. Pipkin,
yes.
Let me interrupt you. I have two questions. One, do you think that there's one contract or two contracts?
There are two contracts. We've got the construction contract, the public work contract, as defined in Section 2253.0014, and then there is the bond.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two separate things.
Contracts. My second question is, do you believe that either or are those contracts ambiguous?
I'm sorry, there was a noise and I didn't hear the
That's
end
okay.
of your question.
Do you believe either of those contracts, whether they are ambiguous or not?
Oh, no, I do not believe either of those contracts are ambiguous at all.
Okay.
And I don't believe that that is an issue that has actually been raised or argued at this point. I think that actually the statute itself is not complicated. We're talking about Section 2253.078A. It says a suit on a performance bond may not be brought after the first anniversary of the date of final completion, abandonment, or termination of the public work contract.
Well, let me follow up with this question. Then what does final completion mean?
Final completion, and again, that's really not an issue in this case, but final completion means completion of the overall contract. And it is under some circumstances, there may be issues that arise post-completion, final completion, where a claim might be made against the performance bond.
But we're dealing with abandonment, correct?
No, we're dealing with termination. Now I'm going to address abandonment because abandonment is the argument that Williamson County has made, but we're really here dealing with termination.
Okay. I guess my biggest question is the bond, the insurance company has the right to bring in another contractor and terminate the work, correct?
If the conditions of the bond are met, one of the options that the surety can provide is to bring in another contractor. It can retain, this is all in the language of the performance bond, it can use the contractor that was terminated, Ritter Bodkin. There were several options under the performance bond that were available to Great American at this point.
But under your reading of the contract, of the bond, if Great American would have brought another contractor to finish the job or to start the job, would Williamson County still have to sue within a year of the first of the contract that was signed with the contractor?
Well, the trigger is either final completion, abandonment, or termination of the contract. If, under a set of circumstances, Williamson County and Great American were able to enter into an agreement, I mean, this is what I've done for 35 years as surety. What would happen is we would enter into either a takeover agreement or a tender agreement where we've agreed to take our responsibilities and obligations under the performance bond. We enter into an agreement with Williamson County. That's the new contract that is between the two parties. That didn't happen here because in December of 2021, we advised, here are the reasons why we are not doing this, why we are not taking, we're not going to complete the project, and we made an offer to try to resolve the claim, but then obviously no agreement was reached.
Okay, so there's a new contract. Let's assume there's a new contract, we have a new contractor, but the contract would be, remember there's two contracts, there's the bond, and then there's, so would Williamson County have to enter into a different contract with the new contractor?
That if there was a tender, if we tendered a new contractor, then yes, under that set of circumstances, they would have a contract with the new contractor. If we entered into a takeover agreement with Williamson County, the contract would be between Great American and Williamson County, and then the surety would be employing the contractor to complete the contract.
Okay, so in no event then, would there be a new contractor working on it without there being a new contract that would be signed?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
It is undisputed that the contract between Williamson County and Ritter Bodkin was a public work contract as defined under Section 2253.0014. And it's undisputed that Williamson County terminated the contract. Again, that's a quote. It's a quote from a letter from Williamson County's board-certified construction attorney. So we're here before you because the trial court erred in denying Great American's motion for summary judgment when the plain language of the statute and the surrounding statutory language demonstrate that Williamson County's sole cause of action against Great American accrued on June 2nd, 2021, when it terminated Ritter Bodkin's right to perform.
Mr. Pipkin, I have another question, I'm sorry. So when they terminate the contract, if your client comes and says, we want to perform on it, we want to bring another contractor, does Williamson County have the right to say no?
It depends on the terms of the particular bond, but this was an A312 or a form of an A312 performance bond, which is standard industry. There can be, for instance, if we went to them and said, we'd like to bring Ritter Botkin back on the job, which is an opportunity under the performance bond, okay. One of the options that's available, it could be that there would be a dispute that Williamson County would say, no, we don't want Ritter Botkin back on the job. And if we can't resolve that dispute, the trigger for any sort of lawsuit against Great American arising out of the performance bond is the date of termination.
I understand that's the trigger y'all are arguing, but let's assume that happens and y'all say, we have a choice of who to bring, we're bringing them back, and they say, we don't want that, and they sue you. Then are we dealing with, one, a ripeness issue? Two, are we dealing with the option that you have under the bond contract to bring in somebody else, including the original contractor, mm-hmm. to finish the project?
I think it's the latter argument. I mean, we were, if under that set of circumstances, we weren't able to reach an agreement with Williamson County on how to proceed on the contract. We would argue we're utilizing one of the methods that we have under the bond to be able to do that. We can't reach agreement. That would then be the subject of a dispute that we're here on, right? And that's essentially we went back to them and said, we're exercising the option of not completing. And we made an offer with respect to the remaining contract balance. It wasn't accepted, and we're here. I mean, it's just another one of the fact scenarios that are possible under the circumstances.
I guess the thing that has me weighing is, if your client has the right and they cannot object to, and they would not be able to bring suit, if you know you decide we want to bring, let's use the same contractor, because I think everybody can understand why they might say, nope, we don't want that.
Yeah.
Can you say, well, you know, there'd be a suit, obviously, but can you say that if you have the right, if the insurance company has the right to force them to accept the contractor that you choose, then it's really not an option for them to sue y'all. So does it really?
I think it would be an option for them to, we don't have an agreement. They would have the option to sue us under the contract, under the performance bond. They absolutely would have the option to do it. They wouldn't be foreclosed from bringing suit.
Okay. But would they be foreclosed from bringing suit 1 year after the initial contract termination date?
The trigger is still the trigger.
Okay, so what happens in a contract that is expected to be performed over a long period of time, mm-hmm. more than a year, as some of these public works contracts are? Termination number one, following your argument, occurs on June 21st. The contract continues under your newly selected contractor, but that performance lasts over a year. What then? No remedy for the county?
Well, I think there's a remedy for the county under if the surety is taking over or is tendering, there's going to be another contract that is in place. And so that's the contract under which a suit could be filed. It's a separate and new contract. It's not a suit on the performance bond, it's a suit on that contract.
Stepping into the shoes of the second contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, that way it's the suit, I mean, the agreement, but let's go with the takeover option, right? The contract would be between Williamson County and Great American, so the suit would be against Great American. If there was a tender, if we tendered a new contractor and they agreed to it and they entered into a contract with this new contractor and there was an issue with that, under normal circumstances, that new contractor also brings its own bond, with the performance bond being a backup, and that would be part of the tender agreement. And so the statute of limitations issue wouldn't be addressed in that circumstance.
Well, what's to prevent the surety from just shirking responsibility by taking too long to decide and running out the statute of limitations?
There's nothing preventing Greater Williamson County in this set of circumstances from bringing suit in any time under the year. I mean, this is.
But what if the election takes place after the statute of limitations?
Again, there is nothing, the trigger is when the abandonment, termination, or final completion happens. If there's nothing that has happened in that period of time, there's absolutely nothing that would have prevented Williamson County from bringing a lawsuit. I mean, the Live Systems case, the Live Systems case is something that I think is instructive here, because that was, even though it's a payment bond case, the analysis that was provided by the Fort Worth Court of Appeals, I think, applies here. And that one is, the statute of limitations for payment bond claims is 1 year. Now, there's a cooling off period. There's a 60-day window where the payment bond claimant can't file a lawsuit. That makes it harmonized with Section 3503 of the insurance code. I haven't briefed that, but that's how that works. But the deadline is still a year from when a notice of claim and sworn statement of account is filed. And I haven't had the opportunity to talk about statutory construction. I guess I'm going to circle back on that when I get to my rebuttal time. But what the Fort Worth Court of Appeals said here, and what I think is critical for the court to understand, is the legislature chose the statutory language of Section 2253.078B in this circumstance for the payment bond claims purposefully. They relied on the plain meaning of the text, unless another meaning is statutorily supplied or apparent from the context, and we construe the statute as a whole rather than reading the individual provisions in isolation. Mm-hmm. That's what we have here. Surety 101, the public work contract is between the contractor and the owner. The surety bond is a separate contract, and we are not primarily liable. We are secondary and conditional depending upon whether the terms of the bond are fulfilled. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for
Thank
rebuttal.
You. Thank you, Mr. Ripken. Mr. Chapman.
Thank you. May it please the court. The first thing I'd like to do before I dive into my prepared argument is address your question, Justice Triano. We have, in this particular case, one contract. We have an instrument that is a performance bond, which in certain situations can be a separate contract. But in this particular case, the record in this particular case, we have one contract. One contract that includes both the agreement with the contractor and the performance bond.
Okay,
and that's in the express language.
This?
Yes.
Okay. In the district court's order, talking about the controlling question of law, the court said that the surety performance bond is, quote, expressly included as part of the public work contract. Can you tell me exactly what express language you believe the district court is referring to?
Absolutely. So the district court got it right. If you look at the contract, and I'm specifically referring to page 108 of the clerk's record, Article 2 of the contract that Ritter Botkin signed with Williamson County says, the contract documents consist of the following, which are incorporated by reference for all purposes. Letter A, this agreement and all exhibits and attachments listed, contained, or referenced in this agreement. If you then, Justice Theofonis, turn to page 160 of the clerk's record, you'll find Exhibit 3 to that contract, which is specifically incorporated reference. Exhibit 3 is the performance bond. The performance bond also contains an incorporation by reference clause, and says on page 162 of the clerk's record, at the very top of the page, paragraph number 1, the contractor and surety jointly and severally bind themselves, their heirs, executors, administrators, successors, and assigns to the owner, which is Williamson County, for the performance of the construction contract, in all caps, as defined by the construction contract, the agreement we just looked at, which is incorporated herein by reference. In this particular case, we have one contract. That includes several hundred pages of different documents, including the agreement, the general conditions of the contract, which are an exhibit, the performance bond, the payment bond, all of the drawings and all the specifications. It's a booklet about this big, if we were to print it. And it's a single contract. It is the public work contract in this case. And in order to trigger limitations based on an act of termination, the statute says that whole thing must be terminated. Not part of it, not one party's right to continue to perform, but the whole thing must be terminated. And that did not happen in this case, which is why the trial court got it right when he said, based on this record and this contract, that the surety and the limitations could not have begun to run until the surety declined to perform on December 23rd of 2021. That, if you're looking specifically to the language of the chapter that controls the 2253 limitations provision in 078, that is the only act which should constitute either final completion, abandonment, or termination of the public work contract. There was no final completion until well after June 2nd and December 23rd of 2021. The county took care of that by hiring a third, by hiring a second contractor after Ritterbachen and Great American declined to complete. So there was no final completion to trigger limitations. There was no termination of the public work contract because the only part of that contract that was terminated was Ritter-Botkin's right to continue to perform that contract. The June 2nd letter to Ritter-Botkin says that. The June 2nd letter to the surety does use the words terminated the contract because the county was trying to establish pursuant to the terms of the bond that it met its conditions precedent to ultimate findings of liability. That is not before this court today. That is for a fact finder in a trial court later on. We have not presented that issue to a judge. The only thing that's been presented today and to the trial court and today is limitations. The question is not whether the county did everything it needed to do to trigger the surety's liability here. The question is, did the county file suit within the prescribed time frame? And we did. We filed suit within 1 year of the abandonment by Greater Botkin on December 23rd.
So, two questions. One is, do you believe the one contract is ambiguous?
No, it's not ambiguous at all.
Okay. And two, when you say that the whole contract must be terminated, you're basing that on what? In order for it
I'm basing that on the language in the statute. And we can look at the language in the statute. I've got printed copies I can read for you. But I think it's instructive to focus on two things. This is a summary judgment case. Did the limitations defense, did Great American establish limitations defense as a matter of law based on this record? And I think the answer is clearly no. I think we can learn that by looking at the language of the statute. Now, Great American wants to focus on the use of the word termination in the June 2nd letter by the county. That wording, as I said, goes to the ultimate finding of liability to the bond. But looking at the language of the statute, we can very clearly see that the legislature understood the difference between a public work contract, a prime contractor, a public work contractor, which is different than a public work contract. It is the party that performs the work of the contract. And the legislature knew that there were distinctions between the relationship of the owner, the prime contractor, and the surety as it relates to the completion of the project and the ultimate payment of the public funds that secured complete performance. And let's look at 2253-001, please, to start. The legislature in 23001, 1, 3, defines prime contractor in quotation marks. Prime contractor means a person, firm, or corporation that makes a public work contract with a governmental entity. There is no question that public work contractor in this case was Ritter-Botkin. They made the contract with the entity, with Williamson County, for the performance of the public work that is River Ranch Park. The next definition, public work contract, means a contract for constructing, altering, or repairing a public building or carrying out or completing any public work. The public work contract is the document or series and set of documents, as I said in this case, hundreds of pages with multiple instruments. That is the public work contract. In order to trigger limitations under 2253.078, using termination as the trigger, a suit on a performance bond, I'm looking at 2253.078A. A suit on a performance bond may not be brought after the first anniversary of the date of final completion, abandonment, or termination of the public work contract. It specifically does not say public work contractor, prime contractor, or any other contractor entity. The legislature knows, and they knew when they drafted this law, that the public work contractor could be released from the project, terminated from the project, without terminating the entire contract. Now, whether the county and its council or its staff used artfully worded language in their letters to make sure they track the language of the statute is not an issue before the court. Counties have used inartfully drafted language and still not been poured out. This case is one where the use of the word terminate in the letter to the surety is not in a vacuum. It's to be considered as part of the overall goal and desire of the county to complete the public work, the River Ranch Park project. Had the county declared Ritter-Botkin to be in default, and had Great American said, we don't believe they're in default, we decline to engage, perform, or do anything with you, the county would have had the right to terminate the Ritter-Botkin contractor and Great American and say the public work contract is terminated, you are both in breach, we are moving forward to exercise remedies in a different manner. And they would have had the right to sue, but they would have had to do so within 1 year of that action. That is not the action taken in this case. The legislature further uses different language in a very instructive way, which is directly on point because, as you know, the rules of statutory interpretation require that we look at the entire statute, not a single term or provision in a vacuum. In 2253.071, dealing specifically with the termination or abandonment of the contract, the legislature recognized that there can be a termination while the county, in this case, still holds contract funds. And they prescribe the process by which those funds are to be released, and not until this in 071 happens. What they said was, the proceeds of a public work contract are not payable to a contractor who furnishes a bond required by this chapter if, A2, the contractor's right to proceed with performance of the contract is lawfully terminated. That's exactly what the county did. They terminated the contractor's right to lawfully proceed with the performance of the contract. The county still had contract dollars in its possession on June 2nd, 21, when it terminated Ritter-Botkin's right to continue to perform. Now, what is
the county? But the letter didn't say we're terminating the contractor, correct?
The letter to the contractor said that. The letter to the contractor said, turn your attention to page 166 of the clerk record. Please be advised, Ritter-Botkin Prime Construction Company, Inc. is hereby terminated from the above described project.
And the letter to?
And the letter to the surety, the same day, page 168 of the clerk's record says, on this date, the owner declared Ritter-Botkin Prime in default on the project and terminated the contract. The owner is hereby making demand on Great American Insurance to honor its performance obligations arising out of the performance bond.
And that's where you're saying that they were inartful in saying.
Well, I think I don't think they're inartful. I think they were artfully trying to establish liability under the terms of the bond. And let me show you where in the bond that exists so that you can see that this is not an issue for limitations. It's an issue for ultimate liability. What the county was trying to do by saying we've terminated the contractor, by saying they terminated the contract, is trying to comply with the language of the bond, which requires the county do certain things as a condition to secure the surety performance. One of the things they have to do, and if you look at page 162 of the clerk record, I'm back on the second page of the performance bond, it says, the owner in section 3 must first provide notice to the contractor and the surety that it's considering declaring a default. That actually happened in May in this project, and it's in the record, but it's not being discussed so much today. It must then, in 3.2, the owner declares a contractor default, terminates the construction contract, and notifies the surety. And then 3.3, and the owner has agreed to pay the balance of the contract price in accordance with the terms of the construction contract to the surety. That tracks 071. The county used that language, Justice Triana, because they're trying to show the jury ultimately that they satisfied 3.2 of the bond.
Did they offer to pay the rest of the contract?
That hasn't been discussed in evidence or the record yet. But I believe they did, and I believe ultimately there'll be liability by Great American to the county. But we got to get past limitations first. And I don't think that looking at the language of that letter and the wording the county used triggers limitations, because it doesn't terminate the entire public work contract. It terminates the construction contract. That's a capitalized term in the bond. It's a capitalized and defined term in the construction agreement. But those are not issues before the court today. Those would be issues if we were looking at a post-judgment or a different scenario where we were trying to establish whether the evidence was supporting the jury's or the judge's finding that Great American breached the bond. In order to breach the bond, the county has to meet its conditions precedent, and Great American has to not perform. Now, I submit to you that I believe the record ultimately will show that in this case. But we haven't even begun discovery. We've only begun a limitations fight that's lasted quite some time, which is why we're here today. But ultimately, what matters most is to give the effect to the language that the legislature used in 2253 as it relates to the performance bond obligations and when the county must file suit. And the surety in their brief, and I a little bit today, and I presume a little bit on rebuttal, they're focusing on the word termination. And they're ignoring the fact that the termination of the contractor is legislatively distinct from termination of the public work contract. The public work contract in this particular case contains express language, including as part of it, the performance bond. And so while I agree with Mr. Pipkin that at times the performance bond is a separate contract, and I will completely agree that in this particular case with this particular record, the performance bond contains contractual obligations on both the county and the surety. But it is not in this particular case a standalone contract. It can be. There are many public owners across this state, and I've worked for lots of them, that have not in similar situations included express language incorporating into the construction contract the bonds themselves. There are plenty of cases where the bond is a separate standalone document, completely free and clear of the construction contract. But in this particular case, with this particular record, and with this particular question before the trial court got it right, and the judgment should be affirmed.
Let me ask you a question, and yes. I'm going to apologize because I got this case not too long ago, and so I just want to find out if, one, you're familiar with it, and if so, do you believe it needs to be distinguished, with the caveat that I've been reading while you've been talking. So it is Amwes Surety Insurance Company versus Jose Cardenas and Gloria Cardenas. Is that something? It's out of the United States District Court of Northern District of Texas. Is that something that?
I'm not necessarily familiar with that case, Your Honor.
And I'm not gonna ask you because I don't know enough to ask you about it to distinguish it, if it needs to be distinguished, but I figured I'd ask.
Yeah, I don't know the case. I don't know what type of bond or what the facts were. I can tell you that I agree with Mr. Pickett. This is an issue of first impression. There is not a Texas case or a Texas court, certainly not a state Texas court, that has looked at this particular language and has offered an opinion as to its interpretation. And while I think that the Great American folks and certainly the sureties of the world would like this to be treated as a certified question, allowing y'all the opportunity to go off and tell the world and all the sureties when they can set their calendar and their reminder to end the liability on the bond. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for the opportunity to say, 1 year from terminating the contractor, you got to file suit in every situation or you lose. They want certainty in the marketplace. That's what the amicus brief said. We all want certainty in the marketplace. But this is not a certified question. This is a summary judgment case on an issue of law that has not been touched by the courts. I've had it in several district courts over the years when no one's ever appealed it until now. So here we are. While I think that there's an opportunity for the court to look at the legislative language that they use in the statute, ultimately, the application of this statute to this record in this case supports affirmation of the trial court's ruling. The summary judgment should be denied. Limitations has not expired as of August 17th when the county filed a lawsuit, and the county should be allowed to proceed with their case. Unless there are any more questions, I'll thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to, Mr. Pupkin, I'm going to let you get into your statutory, but do you know the case that I asked Mr. Chapman about?
I do know the case, Your Honor. I am West Surety Insurance Company versus Cardenas, yes, out of the Wichita Falls Division. It's an interesting case because of its context. It's actually an indemnity case. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into the weeds on that. I certainly don't have time. But the situation that was highlighted there by the court.
And I'm going to give you a little bit of time since I'm asking you to kind of explain something to me that you, it's not necessarily.
Thank you. In that situation, the claim that AmWest made was they had paid a claim on a performance bond claim, but the whole case is about whether the surety in that situation had acted in good faith in paying claims. And so the specific complaint about this one project was, you surety should not have paid that claim because the claim was time barred under 2253.078A. And in that particular case, it said the undisputed summary judgment evidence shows that although specifically incorporated into the bond, AmWest failed to raise the 1 year time bar for suits on a bond in the liquidated in the liquidation proceeding. AmWest was in liquidation at that point in time. And it said the undisputed facts show that on December 15, 1998, the owner gave written notice to the surety and the indemnitor that the construction contract was terminated for default. And then it cites the statute, and then it says that the owner brought the court case more than 1 year after the anniversary. And so what ultimately happened in that particular case was the court said the surety should not have paid that claim because it was time barred. And therefore, you're not going to be able to recover the damages that you suffered on that claim because you shouldn't have paid the claim. It was a time barred claim. Therefore, you weren't acting in good faith. You're not entitled to recovery. That's
but
what AmWest is about.
It doesn't have to do with the public work.
Absolutely. Okay. It was a public work project. It was okay. Under 2253.078A. There's only two cases that have actually discussed this particular one. That's one is the AmWest case. The other is a Fifth Circuit case, Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport Board versus INET. The site, it's in the amicus brief, but the site on that is 819 F3rd 245. That was a situation where the board had actually issued a resolution, effectively an ordinance, terminating the contract. The surety in that particular case was arguing that was the trigger, just the decision by the board, and the Fifth Circuit went back and said no, that there's basically a fact issue on when termination was, but the Fifth Circuit found that just affect the decision to terminate that was reduced to writing wasn't sufficient for that.
Do you know, in at least in the first, in the AmWest, or in that, were they dealing with, we want to call them two contracts or one contract, but we're dealing with a public works contract where the bond was made part of the contract?
I can't speak, I don't think the facts get into that detail, but I want to address that issue, because it, certainly that is, the argument is termination of the public work contract includes the performance bond because of joint and several language in the performance bond itself, or the incorporation by reference language in the contract. To one thing to preface this, the public work contract was signed by Williamson County and Ritter-Bodkin. The surety was not a party to the construction contract. One of the contract documents is the performance bond. That is the bond that was executed actually by the principal of the bond, that's Ritter-Bodkin, and the surety, that's not executed by the county. It's a document that's executed by the surety and the principal, and it's provided, and that's required by Section 2253. For projects of a certain size, bonds have to be provided. It guarantees the completion of the project, and payment bonds guarantee the payment of subcontractors and suppliers, making sure everybody that works on the job gets paid. So I see my lights, but I appreciate time to address these points. The argument is that I want to take incorporation by reference first, and then I'll circle back briefly on jointly and severally. The courts have consistently recognized that incorporation by reference is a mechanism to define the scope of the surety's performance obligations, but it doesn't rewrite the contract. It doesn't rewrite the contract to turn the surety into a primary obligor on that contract. We're still the surety. We're still a secondary, we still have secondary liability, not primary liability. The Transvac System versus Hudson Insurance case out of the El Paso Court of Appeals, it's cited in the amicus brief, it addresses this really very well, and this is the quote. The party's general intent in incorporating the bonded contract into the performance bond was to make the surety aware of the bonded contractor's contractual obligations it was undertaking to guarantee. In other words, the incorporation by reference helps the surety understand that in the event that its liability is triggered under the bond, it understands the scope of what it's going to have to complete.
But with respect to the statute, it refers to the public works contract.
That's right.
Which is defined as all of these things, correct?
No, I don't believe that is. I respectfully disagree with the argument that the public work contract says means a contract for constructing, altering, or repairing a public building and carrying out or completing any public work. That is different from a performance bond. The performance bond is not included in the definition of the statute at all.
But the performance bond references a construction contract, which is defined, and that's with Bodkin. The statute references the public works contract, which public, is
yes,
broader.
That's right. Termination, I mean, in 2253.078A, it's final completion, abandonment, or termination of the public work contract, which is a defined public work contract, a defined term.
And Great American does have the election. They can elect to do a number of things after the conditions precedent are met, correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, so if the suit is against the Great American, if the breach is with respect to the bond rather than the construction contract, don't we need to look at the four corners of the performance bond in determining whether there is a breach?
Of the performance bond, the answer to that is
bond.
Yeah. Of the performance bond, the answer to that is yes. But
so,
again, as counsel has pointed out, we're having limitations because 2253.078A sets the trigger.
Right, but wouldn't we look to the performance bond to determine the trigger, and that defines the obligations of the surety under the election provisions under Section 5?
I disagree with that because it's the public work contract, and the public work contract is between and was signed by the owner and Ritter-Bodkin, and the steps that were taken, I don't disagree with the statement that the letter was sent in order to trigger a response from the surety. There had to be termination in order to trigger the surety's response. That started the clock. That moment started the clock. And then, after several months of investigation, the decision was made. There's no allegation of estoppel or anything that Great American said or did that would have told the limitations. The clock started on June 2nd, 2021.
Well, I get if the surety had come in to step in the shoes of the contractor and we were talking about something that the contractor did, say, for example, left the shingles off of the a structure, something like that, then we'd be looking at perhaps that date of the incident to start the clock. But this, as I'm understanding, the issue is whether or not the surety did something. This is as you all are telling us, this is an action about breach of contract of the surety. And it's the surety who took the election to waive its right to perform and complete, arrange for completion. They took number four, right?
Right.
So how is that not the triggering date?
Because that's not what the statute says.
The statute talks about the large public works contract.
The statute says the trigger is final completion, abandonment, or termination of the public work contract. And the public work contract is a document signed and executed by, in this case, Williamson County and Ritter Bodkin.
So what's final completion?
Final completion, again, this is a circumstance that doesn't apply in this case because it's not a later of, right? It's the first of these things, and that's what starts the clock. Final completion would be final completion of the project. And in a circumstance like you just talked about, right, a factual situation where there is a defect that arises after final completion, and there is a claim made on the performance bond after final completion. Basically it is final completion, and if within 1 year there has to be sued on the performance bond after the project is completed. That's what final completion is about. But that's not what we have here, without question.
Okay.
With
anything
that,
else?
I will sit.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time then, I am gonna submit cause number 0324162CB, Great American Insurance Company of New York versus Williamson County. And y'all are excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.